Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2572. That's 2572. I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA, and I will be running the show tonight. And I do have a wonderful co-host, and that is Pamela Lockridge, and she'll be helping me to run the show. Also, we have Lori Golden on tonight, okay? And I'm really delighted when she comes on. She's a great gal. She is from San Diego, California, and she is a survivor professional. And tonight is going to be an open mic night, and she is a survivor of incest like so many of us are. We have to get over the taboo of saying the word incest because it's just all over the place, and we could even talk a little bit about that tonight. I'm getting phone calls left and right. I'm a night owl, and I do get them in the a.m., and a lot of people are suffering because the children, you know, the children are in the houses now with their the people who are abusing them, and then those who have been abused have nightmares because they remember, okay? It's like a mess. It's a mess out there. But anyway, all right. Before I get started with the show, I do want to read the mission statement here. And we do have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic. And we know this. We know that's a worldwide problem. It's everywhere. Okay, it doesn't just happen in our country. All right, number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'm I like to really talk about prevention. A lot of times I may not do it tonight, but prevention is so important, because if more people out there understood prevention and how good it would be if they could understand prevention, we could maybe put a dent, as I like to say, in the statistics of child abuse, okay? We cannot stop child abuse. At times we have people come on and say, this is how you stop child abuse. You do not stop child abuse. You can put a huge dent, though, in the statistics if people become more aware of how they can do it, okay? And why it's so necessary to make phone calls and so necessary to learn how to do it, how necessary it is to speak to your own children about the pedophiles out there / sex offenders. It can happen to teenagers, too. You don't have to be just little kids. We know this. So all of this can help in prevention. Prevention can start at home. However, prevention may be starting at home, but there's a lot of homes where there's a lot of problems going on, too. And I feel so sorry for those children. So tonight, I'm going to bring on Lori Golden right now. I'm going to open up her mic and welcome her to the show. Okay, your mic is
Hello.
Open. Hi, Lori. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm glad you were on tonight. I thought you were not going to be on. So good.
Well, you know, I got out of the doctor's. I'm glad to be here, too. I got out of the doctor's, and I have tests that have to be run, and they're changing some medication of mine, and we'll see what happens. I'm too tough to die. I'm not ready for it. You know how I am. But anyway, no. I think this can all be handled by medication. It's just a matter of I'm hoping for medication adjustments. But anyway, Lori, is there anything that you want to speak about tonight?
You know, when I come on, I really don't have anything in mind. I kind of just want to see if there's anybody interested in, they might want to explore further. And I guess being a therapist, that's my tendency to want to wait to see if somebody's going to bring something forward about anything that they might be grappling. I mean, I can always throw something out. It's more just, you know, are the lines open? Is anybody else on?
Oh yeah, no, we have Peter. He's from Ontario, and I expect more people will be calling in. But you know what? First of all, let me give out the telephone number. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Okay. So if you want to call in and listen or be a part of this conversation, be on the panel, certainly feel free to do so. We do know, I'll tell you, Lori, a lot of people are listening to their computers. That's what they do. Or they're listening to the archives afterwards. Yeah, they do that. So,
no,
you know,
I know.
Well, I just want to make mention of the fact that Dr. Narelle Atkinson, and that's the section chief of the Child Protection Program at St. Christopher's Hospital. This is in Philadelphia, okay? She has started noticing a change, and it's a 180-bed facility, I guess. The kids that are being brought in, all right, all abuses are at a high. And the children that are being brought in who have been abused, whether it be sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally neglected, which is all the things that we cover here on NASCA, the cases are just going sky high, okay?
It's
scary, we think about the COVID. It is frightening.
Yep.
We think about the COVID, and that's bad enough, okay? I mean, this is bad enough. And then, of course, all the political garbage out there, which makes me so angry. I won't get talking about that. It's not a political show anyway. I'm not allowed to. But boy, would I talk if I could. But anyway, the point is we're going to talk about child abuse. And you know, people out there, Lori also, too, she's a survivor and a private psychotherapist, and she is working with other trauma and abuse survivors, and she is a survivor of incest. See, I want to get incest out there because, you see, so often
I
people
agree.
Go. Yes.
I agree because, you know, I read a statistic on the RAIN site, and it's a large organization that deals with sexual abuse. And there's like 34%, it was at one time, I don't know what it is now, but 34% of sexual abuse happens within the family or extended family. And you're right. When we talk about sexual abuse, people think of it as strangers or, you know, people work in organizations. But they really don't go to the reality that it happens in homes, in families. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's
Do you
so
know
very
what I'm
true.
Saying?
Yeah, and since you mentioned RAIN, I read just the other day that kids are calling in. Now, I don't know how kids are getting involved with RAIN, and I don't know what the age bracket is there. It didn't specify. But it did say that, that they're starting to call in at rain because of abuse. I assume that it's sexual abuse, but it doesn't have to be. It could be physical abuse, too. With all of these lockdowns, you know, that's going on. There's no breathing room for anyone. And children, you know, who are being abused before, it has quadrupled, okay, because of COVID. It's just going on and on and on. So those that were sexually abused are being sexually abused. I remember reading one where it's placed somewhere else. If it was once a week, now it's like up to four times a week. Wonderful. I can identify with that. If it was, physical abuse, it's all the time. I mean, it's terrible. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that the idea of being stuck at home with a perpetrator now, I can't even imagine how terrifying that would be, because the nature, perpetrators are addicts, and they're sex addicts, and they, you know, whenever an addict is under any kind of stress, the first thing they want to do is relieve the stress. So I can't even imagine what it must be like right now for kids in homes. It really makes me cringe when I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it must be rampant right now. Like really a big problem.
Yeah.
I believe it would be. Because of all the stress that adults go through now, with losses of job, with, you know, just the incredible stress of not having normalcy in our lives, it's created everyone I talk to, not just clients, but anyone and everyone, there's this kind of cloud that doesn't ever go away. You know,
right.
Like living under this kind of, so it's not just affecting me as an individual, it's affecting everyone. And then
Lori,
top of that child abuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lori, think about it. You know, the doom and gloom that you're speaking about, we can have gloomy days. I'm speaking in normal times. I have to look at it that way. In normal times, everyone can have a gloomy day. You can have even a gloomy week at the most, okay? But this is every day, and it's consistent, and it just continues to go on and on and on and on. So we're finding a lot of people, of course, in the psych wards as well, people have tried to commit suicide. The suicide rate is ridiculous at this point. It's skyrocketing also, which it didn't mention in this other article that I'd looked at. But I happen to know that it is. And
I know.
Because people, you would know also. So people are at the point in their lives where if there's no light at the end of the tunnel, and it doesn't appear to be at this point, okay, they tend to, those who are of a depressive nature, become even more depressed. And you're going to find people who are going to make that attempt to commit suicide. Some actually do. Others get caught, whatever the case might be. And so that too, has gone up.
Oh, absolutely.
That's gone up.
Absolutely.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead. Sure.
Hi.
This is Pamela, right?
This is Pamela from Louisiana. And we've also got Bob from Ontario, Peter from Ontario, but I wanted to say, are you doing a lot of telehealth right now, Miss Lori?
Oh, yeah. But I've been doing that for quite some time, even way before COVID, yes. But I do telehealth, absolutely. I'm doing it on Zoom calls and FaceTime.
Are y'all having more support groups on Zoom and things like that?
I am right now am not doing a support group. I will be up the road, but right now, no. I work a lot with like couples, individuals. I work a lot with people in recovery from addictions. And I work a lot with survivors of abuse.
Okay, so I'm hoping that more, you know, I found out that group therapy, where it started, was back in World War One.
Group therapy is great.
Yeah, it started back in World War One when all these soldiers were coming back shell-shocked, and they couldn't see them one-on-one, so they saw them in groups, big, large groups, and helped them with their, you know, with their, I guess, shell shock today is PTSD, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Bill's with us too now, Carol. So
I see that. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's see if Peter has anything to say. Peter, do you have anything to say?
As a part of the statistics with men that remain hidden, I mean, 1 in 6 men in this world today remain hidden from sexual abuse, whether it is from strangers or within their own families. I think a lot more, it needs to be more promoted out there in general public, that, excuse me, for people to have those tools. Now, I have been diagnosed PTSD due to the fact that of my experience of sexual abuse, and that would be something that I'll be talking about this coming Friday. I just feel that it's got to be promoted more out there for of any parts of the world, for people to come out of their shell and to discuss it, because it's very frightening.
Can I ask you a question? How did you come out? How did you end up being able to recognize your sexual abuse and first begin to talk about it? Like, when did you first remember, and were you able to share with other people because you're sharing about it now in a good way?
I've always recognized it all my life, and and nobody to look up to or have people to believe me for the fact that I was a boy and I was sexually molested and taken advantage of by a cousin of mine when I was such a young age, and to bring it out further is that my mother and I, we were talking on the phone. Now, this is back, I'm from Australia, so I'll be going from I was born in Newcastle in New South Wales, Australia. And my mother called me one day when I was living in Sydney with my grandparents, and she stated to me in regards, because I went to my mother's place for the weekend, I was able to speak with my sister, and I made a few comments. I told her that, you know, I wish you and I could start being a brother and sister. But then all of a sudden, with the phone call, my mother said to me, she says, oh, by the way, did you know that your cousin has the full-blown AIDS virus? And so the dinner bell decided to ring. And because I'm I'm almost coming up to 31 years of living with HIV, and I do believe that I endured the infection from my cousin, and that I would have known about. And so I said, when my mother told me, I said to her, I said, okay, what's brought this on? So she told me furthermore, she said, oh, just that your sister, Kathy, made mention that that she was sexually abused. I said, oh, so the truth decides to come out. And my mother said, what truth are you talking about? I said, oh, so my sister never told you that I was sexually molested and abused by the same person? And the fight between my mother and I just kept going and going, that she wouldn't believe me for the fact. And she says, oh, no, the only thing that she told me is what you did to her. Now, what I did to her, I was forced and threatened by my cousin with a weapon to take advantage of my own sister.
Yeah.
She was 3 years old. I was only 6 years old. So I've been called a molester. I've been called a pedophile because I've molested my own sister at the age of 6 years old. And what the devil would I know about what her and I knew, if it was right or wrong? Whatever happened to her behind closed doors with my cousin, my heart goes out to her. But what happened between me and my cousin behind closed doors, she doesn't know about. But when you have people that don't want to believe you for the fact that you're a male, that changes everything. But I started opening up to this this issue, this mentally challenged issue that I've been dealing with for so long. I am still in the midst of doing counseling. I try to get involved with people with the church so that I had friends there that can guide me through in the right direction. Even getting involved with AIDS committee organizations, and so it's very difficult, but I like to try and use that as my tool, and so that I can learn to help others along the way. But it needs to be, I think it just needs to be of more promotion. Or promoted out there that, and I'm not being sexist here, so do forgive me, ladies, but I don't think it should always be, it's not about the women. There's guys out there. I know there's guys out there that have been sexually molested, whether it's through a church or from their own home. I know that there's guys out there.
Yeah, I want to say something, Peter. My brother was sexually abused by our cousin. He was sexually abused by my father, and he was sexually abused by a doctor. And he suffered so much because he was a boy and grew up to be a man, and he was so ashamed of the fact that men, that somehow he allowed this to happen. Like, if he was a strong man or stronger, or it wouldn't have happened to him. But there is a difference in society, there's different pressures for men coming in, remembering their sexual abuse, and than it is for women. There really are some differences.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I want to say something here before you two go on. He's going to be our Friday night guest. Peter.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Peter, I'm delighted that you're here on the show tonight. And I would like to go over the topic of incest, you know, a little bit more because it happens so much. And on Friday night, you're going to have, we're going to be, you know, blessed to have you tell your whole story. And so I thank you for what you've offered so far. With the incest, now, did you notice how much he said with this, with that person, with this person, and it's all family members. And then also, too, unfortunately, with the HIV, they are able to handle HIV better today than years ago. Because I used to work in a clinic. I worked in a methadone clinic. And, however, my God, what a thing to happen to you. And I'm so sorry that you went through that. So, anyway, with the incest thing that we're going through in this world, people, you know, out there who are listening right now, I know there's a lot of people listening. They listen and they just don't want to call in because they're bashful. A lot of them are bashful. And it's a very heavy, hard subject to talk about. But our children, our children that are, you know, at home right now, because it depends on what state you're in, okay? A lot of schools are still closed down. Others are starting to open again. I don't think they know exactly what to do with this pandemic thing. I think it's more than a pandemic. It's like a plague. It's warfare. That's what it is, you know, bio-warfare.
Yeah.
But... yeah, but the point is, children don't know, you know, what to do. They have no place to go. They have no one to talk to. They're in the situation. They're in a situation where, who are they going to talk to? If daddy's doing it, if mommy's doing it, if their brother's doing it, or sister's doing it. And yes, you're right. I'll go along with you on that. I've mentioned that so often, Peter, that not enough is being said about the guys, and I agree with that because, you know, all right, it's 1 in 4 girls, we know. Everyone seems to agree on that, although there are some that say 1 in 3 girls will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. And then they say between 1 in 5 to 6 boys by the time they're 18. And a lot of the sexual abuse is happening right in the home, okay? And that's why incest is such a really, really important topic, okay, for people to look at. People cringe. They cringe at the word incest, and they rightfully so. Who wants to think that this is happening right inside of your own home? Home is where you're supposed to be nurtured, loved, guided, the whole nine yards, all the normalcies of home and home life, a safe place to be. But too often it's not. That's all. Too often it's not.
Yeah.
Let's see what Bill has to say. We have to get our founder on. By God, he's here. Okay, Bill.
Bill,
what do you have to say about this? Yeah.
Well, I was listening to the show, and Lori's voice attracted me to come on the air because I love Lori. I think she's a very easy person for people to talk to. And she certainly is for me. So thank you for being here again, Bill.
Thank you.
We love having you once a month. And, you know, I guess, for me, if we're talking about incest, I didn't want to talk about incest, but that's okay. Incest, to me, is still relevant, even though my abuse didn't happen in my family, because my family was... kind of super Catholic, or we call it, you know, like Orthodox Catholic, if you want, when I was growing up. Very strict, very rigid, lots of rules, you know, Catholic schools, religious instruction, all the sacraments and so forth. And then I was abused by priests. Now, although that doesn't sound like incest, to me, it really was, because all the priests were held up as the prototype, the model, you know, citizen, the citizen of the world, if you want, and certainly of the religious society. And they're called father and brother. And So it is a kind of an incest when it happens to somebody, I feel, in the situation I was brought up in. But it was not an immediate family member. It wasn't my mom or dad or whatever. Yeah, I just thought I'd throw that out there because there are going to be people out there who are thinking about incest and they don't fit. But I want to assure them they may. Just like the other topic that was discussed briefly was the PTSD topic. I believe we all have PTSD, to be perfectly honest. I have never met a sexual abuse survivor who doesn't have PTSD. It's part of recovering from trauma to discover the impact that abuse has had on our life, and PTSD is part of it for all of us. So, you know, I just want to say that too, because I don't want people thinking that, you know, they don't fit. I want them to think they do, because they do. I mean, for me,
mm-hmm.
We cover all the abuses, and especially the ones that involve sexual abuse and violence, you know, and emotional trauma and neglect. Well, they all involve PTSD. They don't involve incest, all of them, but they do involve PTSD. But I do say, as a concluding thought, that, you know, the majority of kids are abused by either their immediate or their extended family. So, you know, you can consider that incestuous too. If 2/3 of us are abused by our family members, you know, that's a pretty big problem, obviously. So, but Lori, I did just want to call in and comment on, you made me call in because I heard your voice.
Thank you. You know, Bill, I love what you just said about priests being fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point.
Priests and sisters, Carol, and brothers, right?
So yeah,
I see that Darlene's here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Priests, sisters,
right,
brothers, yep.
I'll be quiet, but that was the point I wanted to make in case there's people out there listening who feel they don't fit. I mean, I think most of us do fit. Yeah.
We all
do.
If anyone is on this call for a personal reason, it means you should be here.
Yeah.
Because we don't grow up thinking, gee, I'm going to get on a show that deals with sexual abuse. I mean, and physical and emotional and mental, you know, I just think that when people think they might have a reason to, are drawn to something like this,
right,
it's because there's something there.
I don't think people listen to these shows by mistake. If you're listening,
no, I don't either. Right. I don't either.
Right. That just went, first it went over my head and then it hit me. I'm not all there today, but that's all right. Yeah. I mean, well, I know. But, you know, We are getting more people. There is more awareness now. There absolutely is with the sexual abuse. It's just that COVID is like covering everything. And of course, you know, with the what's going on in the rest of the world with the political. But still in all, it is so strong and such a good idea to bring out the abuses now. Because of those two things, it skyrocketed even more. And you think, well, it's not going to go any higher. It can't go any higher now. Well, yes, it is. And so, you know, we worry about our children, and we do talk about our children. Let's bring on Darlene from Tennessee. Hey, Darlene, how you doing?
Fair to Midland. How about you?
Fair to Midland. My grandfather used to say that on my mother's side. Yes.
Fair to
Midland. They were from Iowa. They were from Iowa.
Yeah, and I'm from
real foreign people. Well, there you go. So have you been listening for a while? Or have you, we're talking actually about incest, all right? We're speaking about incest and all of the abuses, though, too, as well. And, well, you know, people, they say incest, ew. Well, I say the same thing, and still it happened in my family. It happened to me. But, you know, incest, you know, it's just a nasty word. And it's what it does to children's lives. And with the COVID and all the political things going on out there, this cloud that we were speaking about even earlier with Lori, you know, it's the gloom isn't going away. Nothing's changing. And people, you know, are getting more and more depressed. The suicide rate is up. It was up before, the last time I was with Lori, and now it's really up. And at least the attempt of, or, you know, the actual act itself. And then we think of the lockdowns. You have lockdowns here, lockdowns there, then you have others that open. Every state is different. Everything is like, you know, like really in confusion state. And our children, you know, are feeling it. They're feeling it. You bet they are. So that's what we're talking about now.
Children are feeling it, and adult survivors are really feeling it too, because
yes,
the more isolated people are, the more it stirs up the PTSD, the anxiety, the depression, the hypervigilance, the, you know, addictions. I mean, yeah. So adult survivors are suffering as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They absolutely are. And it's horrifying, because I think what's bothering people too, mostly, I know it's bothering me, is you don't know where the end of the where the light of the end of the tunnel is. You know, how long is this going to go on for? And this scares people. It does. It scares people. Because there's like no end.
Uncertainty always scares.
What'd you say? I didn't hear
yeah.
you.
Uncertainty always scares people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly is making
faith. Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
I got to get some water.
Miss Lori, this Pamela.
Yeah.
It brings up a lot of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know. Some people have to have medication behind anxiety. And I don't know, since people can't go in to their doctors, do the doctors still prescribe anything?
I got to drink some water. I'm losing my throat. It's bad.
Yeah. Doctors do. Yes. Yes. They're still prescribing. And they're doing it. A lot of times they're doing a telehealth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good.
Well, I stopped to get a glass of water because my throat is a mess. But anyway, it's affecting everyone. And those that do have PTSD, I mean, I'm a night owl. I was up so long last night. This is ridiculous. I thought I'd go to sleep. And then I got phone calls. It didn't happen because I'm the, you know, AM person. And that's why my throat is, I'm talking all the time. So people are really scared right now. And you know, and it makes them go backwards. This is what I'm finding.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd like to talk about this, Lori. They're going back, and instead of trying to stay calm, because it's a very hard thing to do, and some people do need medicine to stay calm. I overheard a part of that. But the point is this. They're seeing their past again. They were, like, getting over. They were on their healing journey. And then because of all the fear and the anguish, and all the unsettled things in this world that we're going through right now, the PTSD that they thought that was, you know, like in the background now is starting to surface again because of what's happening. And it's very hard
to
give people – go ahead. Please do.
You know, I in my own recovery, when it surfaced, again, it was because there was more that I needed to learn. And it actually, every time something happens and we're in some kind of a crisis and that stuff starts to come up again, it's because mm-hmm. we need to take a deeper look at something. and learning how to cope with it in different ways. So when people say to me, you know, I thought I was better, I always say, you were better. You are better. Just because something is coming up again doesn't mean that you're not better. It just means you have to take a look at what it is that's coming up and if it needs attention, and is there more healing that you have to do. It doesn't mean that you're not getting better. You know, there's this thing, I find that different things in life bring up vulnerability and fear. And when vulnerability and fear mix together, when something, whatever somebody's in, is uncertain, it's going to rekindle some of that.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. It doesn't mean that you're not better, or that you're not getting better. Kind of like, it reminds me of, like, you know, the times where certain things in life happened and I wanted to do a drug. It's not because I wasn't better. It's just that that's something that just surfaces as the result of my being a drug addict in recovery. And same
mm-hmm.
with, you know, sexual abuse and PTSD. You know, survivors of abuse, when you're suddenly in society and everyone, there's this collective fear going on and uncertainty, nothing taps into childhood abuse than that. I mean, nothing that really can stir up people's abuse. It just can't.
Right.
You know, this is
now,
much closer.
I'm
sorry.
Let me just say one more thing, Bill. Do with it is the issue.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What were you
going
to say, Bill?
This is a lot closer to what I hoped I could talk about. So let me just have a couple minutes here, and I will. You know, I just recently relocated from Florida to California, and I completely gave up Florida. So now I'm going to be permanently here in Los Angeles again with Christina and the dog. But, you know, it gave me an opportunity as I packed everything, and it was a furious, you know, couple of weeks to get it all arranged to send things this way and that way and get rid of things and put them in a pod and pack a van. I finally ended up driving across country with my van loaded with stuff. And I used the opportunity for the drive to do what some people who are listening will understand as inventory,
mm-hmm.
thinking about what kind of behavior I had had over the last period of time. And, you know, the crisis that we're all discussing is the COVID crisis, basically. And during the COVID crisis, I was in Florida before the crisis occurred, and then I kind of got stuck in Florida. So the whole COVID thing until the middle of December, I was in Florida, and a lot of that time I was alone. And I was trying to put a square peg in a round hole. I was trying to buy a house that I didn't have any business buying. That's what it was. But I finally surrendered to that thought and gave up the concept of living in Florida and came here. So I'm driving across the country and I'm thinking about my behavior. And I realized that it had not been very good all year long. Now, what Lori just said about the loneliness and the depression and the being alone and all that, I experienced all that. And unfortunately, I believe some of my behavior was a witness to that. I didn't behave very well in certain situations. And I know there were people at NASCA who heard that in some of my talk and how I responded to them and whether I was supportive or not and all those things. And I did some damage. To be honest, I think I did some damage. I started, though, to back off of the lead roles that I've had over time. And fortunately, people stepped forward to fill those roles. And that's great, because now we're at a place where, you know, at the end of the year last year, I think it was the New Year's Eve show, Carol. I think you were on it with me. I expressed something similar to what I'm saying for the second time tonight, which is that I regret whatever I did last year in the middle of my not paying attention, frankly. I mean, it's hard. You know, I think the four areas that I really need to pay attention to are consistently patience, which I had lost. I had lost my patience with NASCA and NASCA people. I wanted them to hurry up and get it, you know. hurry up and get it. Move forward. Hurry up. You know? Patience, kindness. I was kind of gruff. I was gruff last year. I was not a gentle person, and I want to be a gentleman always. Kindness, where you have to give people the benefit of their doubt, of the doubt, and patience, kindness, tolerance. You know, tolerance is, you know, letting things go. And I usually do let things go, but not last year. I was kind of tough. And love. I still love everybody. I still loved everybody, and I still love everybody now. But I didn't express it right. So anyway, those things, and they all come down to control, which is the problem for me. My main problem is I try to control stuff, and my main solution is to let go. And I was not doing that very well through the bulk of last year and into the fall. And as I pondered these things on my drive back, I realized that I needed to make amends for them too. That's in essence what part of what I'm doing tonight, I hope. Especially in relationship, I understood that women felt that I was tough on them, and I don't think I was any tougher than a guy. It's just we have more women involved in NASCA. But if we had more guys involved in NASCA, I'd be tough on them too. You know what I'm saying? I don't think I'm a misogynist. I actually got called that once, and it was shocking to me to hear that. But whatever. If I offended, you know, someone out there who's listening tonight, or damaged NASCA because of my behavior, I deeply regret it. And saying that isn't enough. The amends really happens when you change your behavior and you move forward, you know, determined to be a little more aware, a little more conscious, a little kinder, a little softer, a little more less gruff, a little less controlling, and all of that. And that's what I'm saying is, this is, I think, something like Lori was saying that comes back to us. And all of us here, well, certainly Carol, Lori, and I, have long, long recovery, and it still comes back is the point. The bad behavior that we thought we might have dealt with, we only temporarily deal with it, frankly. I don't think I've ever gotten rid of a shortcoming that I own or a character defect that I've owned, but what I have been able to do, much of the time anyway, is to not indulge in them. You know, it's not getting rid of them. It's just not participating in them. So I make a commitment tonight that I'm and verbally saying to anybody who's listening that that's my intention over the next period of time is to stay more conscious and more connected and a little kinder, a little softer, a little more tolerant and loving to everybody, men and women, both. Because I love what NASCA has become and it will succeed without me. Frankly, and that was one of my goals, you know, was to have it be arrive where it is now, which is it's very strong, and it helps a lot of people. So anyway, I'll get off the stump now. But thank you for giving me that opportunity, Lori, because that's really kind of what I wanted to talk about.
No, I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, this is Pamela. It sounds like you're doing what one of the recoveries is. Inventory, is that what it's called? Self-inventory?
Yep.
One of the recovery steps? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, inventory's one step, and then discussing it is another step, and then talking about it is another step, admitting it is another step, and then doing something about it, i.e. making amends, which are life, they're living things. It's making amends to me is a living thing. That's part of it. You know, I realized I wasn't praying. What do you mean you're not praying? I've always prayed. Well, I stopped praying. That's part of it. It's all part and parcel of the kind of recovery system that I've used over time, and it's been very successful for me, but it's not a straight line. I keep saying this to people, you know, and Lori is saying she too realizes you get to a certain place, and then you can kind of, especially in a crisis or in a place of frustration, which I was very frustrated last year, you can misbehave. It's easy to slip back into old behavior, character defects and shortcomings that you thought you had dealt with, but no, you only temporarily deal with them anyway. So, I love you all.
Bill, one more thing, it's Pamela. So where does forgiveness come in the recovery step, forgiveness?
Well, it's all over the place. First of all, when I first got into recovery, I had to realize I was in with a bunch of other people who were also in recovery. This idea of group therapy definitely applies to me. And so does individual, because I worked with individuals too. But, I realized that if I wanted to be forgiven, because I have a lot of things that I did wrong in my life, a lot. Now, they didn't include pedophilia, but so what? They included all kinds of other things. If I want to be forgiven for my transgressions, then I have to be willing to forgive. This is more Catholicism than this program's work, but it's a Christian concept. That if you want to forgive, then you forgive. You know, if you want to be forgiven, you forgive first.
Well, I wanted to think of it more as interpersonal or interrelationship. I mean, you know, holding resentment, you know, against somebody after they've done something. I mean, how do you ever get back in a relationship with them if they've closed that door? You know,
you do it by boundaries. You know, you can love somebody but still hold them responsible for whatever they did. So you can forgive and not forget. And you can set your boundary in such a way that they can't come into your circle for those reasons. But they can come in for other reasons, but not those. Now, this is not possible with some people, and it has to be decided on an individual basis. Because when we make amends, we make amends when it doesn't hurt the person we make the amends to, ourselves, or others. There are exceptions. You hold yourself in readiness to make the amends if there becomes a situation where it's appropriate, but a lot of times it's not yet, and maybe never will be. Still, you hold yourself willing to make amends when that occasion arises, if it does. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll say something to that. There are people in my life, okay, that I do not forgive because they knew what they were doing. Okay, this is the way that I look at it. But what I do is I give it to God, because He is the one who's going to determine everything when we die, where we go. Well, you know, this is what my Christian belief. I'm Catholic too, and this is my Christian belief. And my mother, by the way, she was an atheist. She says that we came from the ocean. I don't know. She also told me she was a witch, and I think I kind of believe that. Yeah, I do. I don't just kind of. But anyway, you know, it's we have to learn how to, you know, like handle things so that we can move forward. And if I want to believe the way that I do, you know, that I give it to God because it's too big for me. I see, let's say, for instance, if my brother came up to me, I don't even know if he's alive anymore. I don't even know, last I knew he was, but I don't know, that was a long time ago. If he came up to me and said, "Hey, sis, remember when we were, you know, younger, but believe me, he was 5 years my senior. And so when he was says younger, he was around, you know, it went up to 21 for him, and I was taking the brunt of his disgusting behavior, okay? If he was going to say to me, will you forgive me? If he would do that, if he would admit, okay, that he had, at the age of 9, he started to sexually abuse me. And it went until well into my teens because I was so scared of him, okay? I'm not going to say that I would forgive him 100%. I would try. I would certainly make the effort, let's put it that way, because he's admitting to me that he did wrong instead of being the brother that I needed at the age of 9, especially because of being kidnapped and raped and then going into that, for God's sake, and being with a pedophile house before that. Look, somewhere along the line, there's got to be some help and hope, okay? I needed a brother. If he had said to me, you know, forgive me for my actions, I think that I could have found it in my heart to do that. But he never did
right.
that. So
no.
what I did was I put him along with a list of other people that I gave to God, okay?
Right.
Because, yeah.
Well, we give everything to God. In the process that I'm using, we give everything to God all the time, all of the way. All the way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, again, the piece of the puzzle that we're talking about, Pamela, is we make direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So that's how it's designed. Now, when I make amends, it's not my business how the amends are received. I don't do it so that I get a specific answer back from the person. You know, it wouldn't be like, I'll give you amends as long as you give me amends. No. They may be very pissed off at me for something or very angry that I even bring it up again or whatever it is, and that has to be okay with me. I'm there to do my – and the whole thing is I'm not here to change anybody except Bill.
Absolutely.
And I have only have a modicum of control over Bill without God. I have to ask for help in order for Bill to be able to control himself. How can I ever imagine I can control anybody else? I do the best I can and let go. Let go, let go, let go. So that's, again, part of the answer.
Let go and let God. Let go and let God. Okay.
That's what I just said.
I went to AA enough that I heard that. Go ahead.
But I didn't say that. I didn't say the program's name, and I didn't bring it up as any. I'm just describing what I do, and it is a specific set of things that I do, and the immense part of it is that. But this, God is all through it, and my willingness to let go and let God is all through it, all through my life for the last 38 years, right?
Right.
But last year I didn't do so well, I guess is what I'm saying, Carol and Lori. You know, I didn't do so well. And it takes a while for you to even recognize that you're on the wrong course for a moment here, for a few months. You know, you kind of come out of the funk and you realize it's not enough just to realize, just to think about it and come to that conclusion. There actually has to be put in action. And that's what I guess I'm trying to do tonight, is to put it in action by way of making amends. And saying,
right.
You know, the amends includes my will and my intention to not do that again. If I can help it, I don't want to do that again. I don't, you know. And then I have to continue to take inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. And then I have to pray and meditate to God and pass on what I've learned. That's all part of the process. So, yeah. Anyway, thank you for
giving
me a block.
Well, I forgive you. I forgive you. I forgive you, Bill. I forgive you. I forgive you.
I know.
Okay.
I haven't seen any of this, Bill, so.
Hey, if Bill gets out of line or something, I don't even feel it, to be honest with you. But I know what he's talking about. But you have to understand, too, look, we're survivors. It doesn't mean that we're 100%. You know, survivors. It doesn't mean that we're going to ever be 100%. And even the normies aren't 100% either. I've got news for you. But the point is,
no one's 100%.
That's right. That's exactly right. But But, you know, sometimes we do slip backwards a little bit. I mean, that's just human nature, okay, because we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes.
I understand, but you're
asking, you know, forgiveness or something, whatever, that's fine.
I regret that I might have done some damage to either individuals, you know, or the group as a whole, and I'm conscious of it. I'm just expressing it, that's all. I'm not beating myself up.
Yeah, that's fine. No, don't. Don't do that.
Well,
you see, he came up with a word before, was control, okay? In our lives, we as survivors, and we're all survivors on this show. Lori's a survivor as well. And, when we were a child growing up and all these things that were happening to us, we had no control. We had no control of what the other person or persons were going to do to us, okay? And I think that that can damage us in certain ways where for two reasons, yes, we need to get control of our lives because sometimes, like with me, I was out in the streets, other people are doing this, other people are doing that, whatever. So we have to control ourselves and set boundaries. But then also, too, it's also because we had no control when we were a child and we couldn't stop what was happening to us, okay? And then that might give us a little bit of a controlling type of personality. But that, too, which he has recognized, which is good, he has recognized this, and he's actually, in his way, asking for forgiveness. In fact, he did ask for forgiveness, you know, if he had, offended someone, okay? So that's making amends in AA term, and also, too, being very honest. So that's good. That's good. But this can happen to all of us, and you can see, like in Bill's case, what it did to him. You know, he was so frustrated in a terrible, terrible situation, trying to move. He had no business buying the house and all this other stuff, all the things you just heard him say. And he's just a person. He's not God. He's a person just like I am, just like you are, just like we all are. And he fell into, confusion and anguish and he was lonely and he was mad and he had all these things. I could hear it in his voice. I could hear it, and which a lot of people would have gone through, okay, whether they were abused or not, because of the situation of the world. And someone else had said how we handle it. And I agreed, Lori, I think that was you who had said that. I agree with that. It's how we handle what's thrown at us, okay? Because we never know what's going to be thrown at us as we go through life. And we, the survivors, we're still standing. We're very strong people in many ways, but we are injured people. And injured doesn't mean that you haven't healed. Injured means that something happened to you. You may still be in the process of healing. That's why I call it the healing journey. And we may even feel it more, whatever it might be that was thrown at us. But the point is that we're doing the best we can and we're doing a darn good job. We really are. And we're able to help a lot of people from whence we came, okay, because we know we walked those steps. We walked in those shoes. We know what the children are going through. This is disgusting. And we know what adult survivors are still feeling. And programs like we're having tonight with Lori, you know, it shows us how to help cope, you know, with what's being thrown up at us as adult survivors of child abuse. Thank you, Lori. You said some good stuff there.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, like whenever, like I forgive my family and stuff, but that does not mean I want around them. So I stay away from people that's still a danger, or if that causes me to be worse off emotionally, just get back around the family, it's best that I stay away, keep my safe distance. You know, so that's what I have to end up doing. And I about panicked the other day, but when my twin sister contacted me and said that my sister from southern Georgia moved close to somewhere around Tennessee. And I'm like, no, find out where. I don't need that threat around me, you know. She's the sister I disowned after she said that it's God's punishment to me, even the sex abuse my dad did to me at age 2. So, yes, I got a problem with that, excuse me. So,
yeah, I hear
I don't need to look at my life.
how many times did we say, though, Darlene, and I agree with it 100%. I believe, too, you know, to stay away from toxic people. Because toxic people, you know, they can bring us down from where we're at. We work so hard to get to where we are. We don't need to have toxic people in our life. And those people, if they can bring us down, and they can, okay, then it's good to stay away from them. What do you think about that, Lori, with the toxic people?
Oh, I do not. I'm never around toxic people. I mean, I can see that someone is toxic, but I don't have to choose to be around them.
Right. That's like being around a rapist again. I mean, you know, it's like being around a rapist again. Go ahead, sorry.
To me, it's part of a big part of my recovery is really loving myself and being around somebody that's not good for me isn't an act of love. It's self-destructive. And, you know, I've worked so hard to have a life where I'm not involved with abusive people. And I don't think anyone has to. I don't care if it's a family member. I don't care who it is. If somebody has been abusive to you and you're not comfortable with them, you have a right not to be around them.
Right.
That's right.
And we put some of these people out of our lives just to protect our kids, too, so the same things don't happen to them, possibly.
Absolutely.
Well, sure. This is what I did mention boundary setting as part of one of my answers here. That was a question.
Mm-hmm.
But I have boundaries, and some of them are really hard. Like I think Darlene is expressing, some of her boundaries are really hard with family members. Others are softer. So there's a degree that I will allow myself to interact with certain people, but I won't go beyond that degree. So I give them that much, but not everything. Because there are some people I don't want to be hurt again. You know, why would that be kind of silly? But I can. Boundaries don't all have to be absolute. They can be measured. I sometimes use the example of if someone in my family is going to have a wedding. I go to the wedding, but I don't go to the reception because it's at the reception. That's the social event where I might run into the uncle that molested me or whatever. You know. But it gives me an opportunity to participate in the event, the wedding itself, but not put myself in the middle of a possible place that I would be hurt or I would hurt others. So that's a softer boundary, in other words.
Right. Like when I had to go to my cousin's funeral, what a wake thing that they had because they didn't really have a regular funeral service. But I had to be around that social gathering, where they had meal and all that kind of stuff together and everything. And that was so hard, But sometimes we do things just if you love somebody in the family that passed away, that ain't going to stop you from going there being supportive to the other family members and, as far as the ones that, just lost that loved one, the immediate. Like one of them was a cousin to me, and I called him my uncle because that's what they always said, but he's really a cousin, kind of find out.
Yeah. So remember you told me that.
That's exactly what I'm saying is you might, if, you know, if you have somebody in your family that you want to, whose life you want to validate, you go to the funeral, but you don't go to the party afterwards. I don't really go to
exactly.
wakes.
Exactly.
I don't like wakes.
Exactly.
You know? But I do go to the funeral ceremony, and that's a way for me to honor them, but then not put myself in the social situation where I could get in trouble. That's a perfect example, darling.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to find out that I was not only related to him, you know, as a cousin, but also related to the wife as a cousin, not through him, but through another way, you know.
Well, you live in Tennessee, right?
So I lived in Alabama when that was Alabama. So.
Well, it's the same thing. If you live in Alabama or Tennessee, you're related to everybody in Alabama and Tennessee, isn't that true?
Not really. I don't really hardly know anybody I'm related to, but my ex-husband, that's true with him. Because
I'm
they
joking.
Were first cousins that were married.
I was joking with you, and it was a bad joke. See, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, let's beat him up.
Yeah, because I don't even want to think I'm related to my siblings and stuff, so I'm saying not really, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Oh, my God. What people do,
you know,
I don't
funny?
Know.
I come from the other side of the coin. I don't know anybody I'm actually blood related to. None,
mm-hmm.
nobody. I have mm-hmm. a big family, but I'm not related in by blood to any of them.
That's right.
I only recently discovered who my mother was. She's deceased for quite a number of years, and we don't even know who was the sperm contributor for her. So I have no idea who that line was either. So anyway. It's kind of funny because, you know, this is an example of no matter where you are, there you are. And you deal with life as on life's terms, not on Bill's terms. You know, I would love to have the sister that I did get adopted with live a lot longer than she did. She died at 50. I miss her still.
Yeah.
Because she was the only sibling I had, and I loved her to death, and literally
yeah,
to death.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
close, yeah.
You know. But it's not my choice. It's this is how life happens to me, and I move on, you know, and make the best of it. So but I have all of you
Bill,
brothers and sisters, don't
Bill?
I? Brothers and sisters of choice.
Yeah, we have,
yeah,
we have Lakeisha. Mm-hmm. I can handle it.
Lakeisha's here?
We, yeah. I see
oh,
that.
Hi,
you
Lakeisha.
Put that in. That's good. Yeah, we have Lakeisha here from Los Angeles. Hi.
Sure, I know Lakeisha. Hi, Lakeisha.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
I can't complain. Hardly ever do.
It's nice to hear your voice. It's nice to hear all your voices.
Oh, I'm
glad
to hear
you. It's
nice
to have you back. I'm glad you came back. Yes, sir. So have you been listening to this show or what?
Well, you know, I just left another meeting. It was my first time at this meeting. So I've been in for about almost 20 minutes. I love
mm-hmm.
what Bill
mm-hmm.
was saying about how boundaries can be measured and not going to the reception. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's something that we all have to learn, okay? Maybe even we who have been injured, if you want to put it that way, in our lives, because we came from such dysfunctional homes that we weren't taught boundaries. So then as we went on and through, you know, in through life, we realized that we had to learn boundaries just to move on, you know, and to learn and to succeed. You know, there are boundaries in life. Now, I was a brat. I didn't want any boundaries. They weren't offered to me, and I didn't want them. You know, I can't do that now. How come? You know, the things like that. But, you know, if we're going to heal in life and if we're going to be successful and, you know, to the best of our abilities or whatever we're supposed to be, we have to learn in life and accept that there are boundaries. Yeah, absolutely. This has been a very interesting show. I think we have about 12 minutes left or something. It went very, very fast. But what would you like to speak about, Lori? You've been, you know, offering a lot of good advice here. What would you like to talk about? Go ahead.
Just that I think, you know, healing isn't a one-stop thing. I mean, to me, everything that I've done to get better in my recovery has been a practice. And sometimes people think of healing as, you know, you go and you deal with certain things and then you're going to be okay. Like they have a lot of quick fixes out there and a lot of things that give people the impression that, you know, this healing that healing is simple. But what I find for myself in my recovery is that I have to practice this stuff. Like I have to, you know, make it part of my life and practice things that I've learned along the way. And it's always, to me, it's a practice. So I just want to say, if people are listening, that healing happens over time. And it happens slowly. But it happens if you're willing to really put it into practice. So it's just something I was thinking about.
Right.
Like
right.
Bill practicing, that's a practice to me.
Well, who's moving around? Someone's moving around. It sounds like they're snorting coke. That's what it sounds like. Someone's going to calm
down
there.
It's my dog, Molly. She's sorry.
Okay.
It's a dog?
Yeah, she's my dog, Molly.
Good golly, Molly.
Good golly.
Good golly, Molly. That's right.
There you go. Well,
I
think, sure, go ahead.
I wanted to ask Miss Lori about her book, My House of Lies.
Right, go ahead.
Miss Lori?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. About your book, My House of Lies, Awakening from a Childhood of Sexual Abuse. So what was your house of lies? Was it everybody lying to each other or?
Well, when you grow up in a home with sexual abuse, everything's a lie. Because everything, it's all covered up. You know, we lived this kind of life where we would, you know, we did all these, these fun, like going boating every weekend or going skiing, you know, during the skiing season. And, you know, but nobody told the truth. Because everything is built around keeping what the disgusting behavior of my father was. Everything was built around that. So it was everything was a lie. There was never any real truth being shown.
I always thought of it as an elephant in the room, that there's this big elephant that nobody's wanting to recognize or talk about, or, you know, it's like huge, but you don't talk about it.
Right, but if you don't talk about things that are there, then they slowly erode. There can't be any truth if everyone is trying to pretend that something that is there isn't there, because your whole life becomes that. It's not just one experience. It's day in and day out. So if an elephant's in the room and no one's talking about it, then everybody has to construct a way of living that denies the truth. So it's kind of like, so everybody in the home is kind of built around lying.
My
mother worked 6 nights a week in the bars and partied on the weekends, and us three girls were left with her second husband. He was a monster. He was a pedophile. And, you know, I'd be sexually molested all week. And then Sunday, you know, before she went out and partied Sunday night, we'd go have fried chicken at my grandma's, and my grandma set a beautiful table of fried chicken, mashed potatoes and gravy, and, you know, all the veggies and the iced tea, and, you know, and then once we had that, it was back to the monster again, you know. It's like, it's sick. It was sick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. I can identify with Pamela. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and there's a lot of lies, too, when they're told, oh, you know, if you wouldn't have been so pretty, keep this secret. You know, I really love you. That you're gorgeous. You simply so damn cute. You know, whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what happens in families. Now, Pamela, you just said something there, because when I finally was with my mother and my stepfather, what a day that was when I first met him. They'd gotten married. I was still in the house with a pedophile. I didn't know about it. But my mother liked to cook. We all liked to cook. And she would set, like you just said, like this wonderful, you know, table of a lot of food. And believe me, I needed it. I was being starved. So I was like, it was like Christmas time every day. But when the meal was over, the truth would come out. You know, all the dysfunction. And that's a sad thing. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I remember when I got older and I would be, you know, because he sexually molested me from the age of 4 to 18. We'd go to my grandma's when I was 14 and that. And I'd always say to him, for every time we went over there, I'd say, I can't wait till you get old enough for me to take your cane away from him and beat you to death. And I was acting like I'm kidding, right? But I really meant it. And so I think later on in life, you know, he tried to get a protective order against me because he remembered me telling him that for years. I can't wait to get over that cane and beat you to death with it.
Wow. Hey, don't talk so much about your book. I'm reading it. Be quiet. You're going to tell me things. Oh, my God. I'm reading Lori's book right now. Not Lori's. Pamela. I'm reading
Pamela's
book. I'm going to read your book next. So I have books ahead of me to
read. I have to read.
And I got Carol's book I'm reading.
Oh, well, there you go. We're all reading each other's books. All right. That's good. That's good.
Can I tell
I have.
Carol?
Yeah, go ahead.
Kept from 4 to 18, a survivor's fast track to mental wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And I have worked 3 stages plus narrative therapy. But Darlene, after you finish Carol's book, please pass it on to me.
There you go. Well, you know, my book is funny because I have a lot of humor. I don't know why. I think that's one thing that helped me get through life, even at its worst, is I love to laugh. And I like to make other people laugh, okay? And it lifts the spirit. It lifts the spirit. And when we're living in such a world where there's so much confusion and so much, we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, if you can find laughter in something, I'll turn on, what is it called? Molly and Me or something. That's one of them. Oh, my God, it's years old. But they're so funny. And I can be down so low, you know, and I'll turn this show on. I think it's called Mike and Molly. I had never seen it before. But my son likes to watch all the oldies. Do you know that show? Okay, it's funny. Yeah, go ahead.
Aren't you talking about, what's it called, hon? King of Queens.
I think it's called Mike and Molly. Oh, King of Queens. Oh, I have gone through all of them. I have no more episodes to watch. I loved King of Queens. On the flip side of the coin, I was watching Shameless too, because they're so naughty, you know. So I had all these shows. They're naughty, man. I think they're coming back, but they had all of these shows to watch, which would take my mind off of, you know, the doom and the gloom. And geez, my son watches shows from way back when, you know, like the Honeymooners and things like that, to lift his spirits up, because this is a time when we need to lift our spirits up, because it gives us strength. And it, without
yeah.
strength to get through each day, and not knowing what the, you know, what next week is going to bring, we need to have some kind of laughter in there, because I honestly believe that laughter too is healing. Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Laughter is extremely healing.
Mm-hmm. I believe that. Yeah.
You know, like whatever.
An endorphin rush.
Mm-hmm.
Before I started getting to where I could get out there and before I started therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was telling the elder at church about what was going on, and I had a smile on my face. But that's the only feeling I really knew, you know, besides happy, sad, but I knew that would, the smile on my face was always accepted regardless, you know. So he said that I lied and it really didn't happen to me because I had a smile on my face when I talked about it.
Well, we need
so
that. We need more
y'all
smiles.
To deal with that too.
Yeah, that's right. But we need more.
You know
we need more smiles on our face. Go ahead, Bill.
I spent a lot of my career working in comedy. I have a lot of background in comedy, especially sitcoms, which are what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about, the Mike and Molly and the King of Queens
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And in my case, mm-hmm. all of you will know the Golden Girls, for example, and perhaps
yeah.
Empty Nest
yeah.
and Blossom. Blossom was a big one I worked on. And anyway, the point is that I just want you to know it's hard work to make really good comedy. It's not easy.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's really hard, but there's a dedication to it that we in the industry had because, you know, we'd go a very long extreme to get a good one big laugh in a show. We would spend a lot of time and all week long, you know, and everybody's input mattered. So I'm glad to hear that people appreciate these shows because they're kind of what I did for a living. You know, I never was at
yeah.
the high end of things, but I was a cog among the machine that made some of these, and it, you know, I like to watch some of the shows. Occasionally, I'll run into one that I edited, and I'll remember how hard
mm-hmm.
it was to get it.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's right.
A
little bit. We need those shows. Oh, we've got 90 seconds. All right. I want to say we have a full panel tonight. There isn't one more spot where anyone could fit in here, okay? And I'm really happy that everyone called in, and I want to thank Pamela for helping with the co-hosting, and I certainly want to thank Lori Golden for being on the show. It's always a good show when Lori comes on. And she has quite a story herself, and I do recommend her book, My House of Lies, as well. Okay, so we've got three authors on here tonight. But anyway, we're going to be back again tomorrow. I won't be here tomorrow, but I might be here on Thursday, and I'm definitely here on Friday. I have to look at the schedule. But anyway, I love running the shows, and I love NASCAR. It's got its ups and downs, Bill. But I do love NASCAR. I wouldn't be here for almost 11 years, would I?
We love NASCAR.
So you keep that thought in mind. Yeah, so you keep that thought in mind, okay? I mean, no show is perfect, okay? It's going to have its ups and downs, but the show is still here. So that means we're doing something right. And my throat being so hoarse means that I'm doing a lot of talking. So, you know, we're helping a lot of people. by the shows and by the Zoom and the calls. People, the contact page, call anytime. There's a lot of people on that contact page. If you'll never be alone, okay? Look at the website. Okay, I have to close the show off now. I've got to sign off.
Thank you.
Okay.
So anyway,
goodbye,
thank you so
everybody.
Much, everyone. We had a wonderful
thank
show,
you.
And come back again, okay? We'll be here tomorrow, okay?
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Good
night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.